it really has a lot about financial literacy. Education, financial literacy, and how important it is to get it for yourself rather than hand your money off to somebody else. Because once you learn how to make money, you always have that skill. And we really took that to heart and feel very passionately about helping others get the skills themselves.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Lady and Kenji are a physician couple who freed themselves from the 60-hour work week grind. And as they say it, now it's your turn. Lady and Kenji, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having us. We're really excited to talk to you today.
There's three things that I ask every guest who comes to the show. Can you quickly tell us, where did you start? Where are you now? And how did you get there?
Kenji and I started together in 2015. We're both physicians and we read Rich Dad, Poor Dad and read it together actually on a vacation. And at that point, we were about to buy a primary residence. And we realized, oh my gosh, we're both employees and we were both working more than full time at that point as physicians. And realized we need to be investors. So we completely changed track just based on that book and took the money we were going to put into a primary residence as a down payment.
An expensive one.
Yeah. And then just started investing in real estate and bought ourselves two duplexes to start out. And that was 2015. I should note that Kenji was investing in real estate previous to that since 2001, but largely kind of appreciation plays, raw land, expensive condos.
And I got caught in the downturn.
Yeah. And so when we started together in 2015, we did cash flowing, you know, BC class multifamily. That's kind of what we've built our portfolio over the course of 7 years, I think now, 6 or 7 years. We're about to close on part of 160 unit. And then at that point, we'll be over 150 units ourselves.
Wow, that's a lot of moving pieces. And from what I understand, you're also claim to fame is that you're digital nomads now. What does that mean?
Well, that's actually something relatively new. That means that we travel around as a family. We put all of our stuff in storage in Seattle, and where we are the next month all kind of depends on where we want to go and where we're allowed to go.
We have a 6-year-old, a 3-year-old, a 7-month-old with us, and then one employee from our kind of course business, and then one nanny. So there's 7 of us traveling.
That's a lot of moving pieces. My goodness. So I guess I would take it from that statement that you are both no longer physicians. You're full-time real estate now?
I stopped my half-time job last October. So it's been a year since we've done any shifts in the hospital. Technically, we're still moonlighters. We can do shifts. Right. But we have not. And I will say that we're real estate. And then Kenji is the CEO of our real estate portfolio. And I'm the CEO of our blog business, which we've grown since we started that in 2018. And we've grown it. We have about 15 employees right now. And then have helped 3,000 physicians and their family members.
As well as doctors and other high income professionals.
Yeah. Go through our course, learning how to invest in real estate.
Wow, that's absolutely stupendous. Let's rewind the tape then a little bit here. And Kenji, let's hear from you on the statement where you said you got caught in the downturn in 2008. What did you learn from that? And how are you guys positioning yourselves differently now?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think one of the things that we do, we incorporate a lot of our teachings from Keith Cunningham, who is the real rich dad, actually, the one who taught Robert Kiyosaki. And so he's in his 70s. He's an amazing business leader. And one of the things that he always talks about, because he also was caught in real estate. And so one of the things
he lost $100 million.
He lost $100 million. Yeah, it's a little bit more than I did. So one of the things that he teaches is something called a risk mitigation framework. And what he says is that everybody can easily think about the upsides of any deal. But what you really have to do is think about the downsides and whether or not you can live with those downsides. And people don't spend enough time thinking about those downsides. So what I would have done differently is with every investment deal, I would have really thought through the downsides and whether or not I could live with those downsides. And the other thing that we add on to that, we've kind of enhanced what he teaches, is that we think about ways in which we can mitigate those downsides. How can we make those downsides less painful? How can we make those downsides less likely to happen? And so this is really the core of our strategy, which is to focus on cash flow. And that takes into account anything like vacancies or unexpected repairs, right? We have that financial cushion in case something like that happens. On top of that, what we do is we don't bet on appreciation. We force appreciation. So we really look for those value add opportunities where we can increase the value of those properties. And that helps mitigate that risk when there's another downturn.
Right. How are you presenting that to investors? Because there's so much froth, I think, right now, actually in almost any asset class, there's a lot of froth. So how are you presenting that to investors on the, you know, are you able to live with the downsides of this opportunity? Like, how do you put that in writing such that they can see it, understand it, and absorb it and say, okay, yes, I'm good with that?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think the main difference is that what we're doing is we're teaching the doctors and the high income professionals that we work with how to fish. So in other words, how to assess those opportunities for themselves. And so we're not necessarily telling them the downsides of any particular investment. It's more about giving them a framework for how to think about any investment that they come across. And there's a lot of common themes in each of those investments in terms of assessing the risk, whether it's the operator, whether it's the investment itself, whether it's the loan product that they're using, right? So thinking about all the different dimensions of an investment, it's really up to them to think through that. I think one of the things that we do is we abdicate responsibility. We stop thinking, right? We turn off our brains. And right, so one of the things we teach people is really ask good questions, take the time to think. This is also another Keith Cunningham, take the time to do some thinking. He calls it thinking time. And so what he does is he actually schedules time to think about an investment and how many people actually schedule time to think about something, right? And so that's one of the things he teaches us to do. And we in turn teach our students to do as well.
That's fabulous. Lady, let's talk about the blog. You have a blog with 15 employees, you say, that you're running right now. Is it real estate or is it otherwise?
The theme of the blog is helping doctors and their families create other sources of income outside of clinical medicine so that they can work in clinical medicine on their own terms. Because to a non-doctor, this probably sounds crazy, but there's a lot of suffering in the physician space with how things have changed over the last 20 years. And just to give you an example, physician suicide is double that of the general population. And so a lot of our physician colleagues feel very trapped and feel like cogs in the wheel, and they don't feel like they have choices. And what we're really teaching them, like Kenji said, is to buy their own investment properties, build that source of income, and then they can decide how they want to work in medicine. And for a lot of them, it means they actually stay in medicine. They just now have the freedom to work at whatever job they want, or they're doing their good in their world as a doctor and they don't need the money, which is incredible. And so it's kind of a blog, but it's a blog, it's a podcast, it's a community. I would say it's more of a course business where we teach, give physicians the tools to buy long-term rentals and short-term rentals and build their own portfolios.
That's absolutely fantastic. What were some of the challenges that you faced along the way building that platform?
So first of all, we're physicians, right? We had no idea how to be CEOs. It's been a lot of learning. And so we found mentors, which is, I think, what people need in real estate is a mentor who's done it themselves. So Kenji already mentioned Keith Cunningham has been a real mentor in learning how to be a CEO. And just I've been reading a lot, going to masterminds, speaking to a lot of other entrepreneurs. We actually joined like a mastermind with Tony Robbins. And so that's with all bunch of entrepreneurs who we get together with pretty regularly and learn from them. And so it's just really learning about from people who have already been in that space.
Yeah. I mean, just to give you a sense, I mean, we really invest in ourselves. I mean, we probably spend over six figures.
We definitely spend over six figures
every year to invest in ourselves, whether it's mindset, whether it's business training, whatever we feel like we need, that's we're investing in it.
Wow. That's absolutely fabulous. And when you got into that and you discovered, okay, you know, we are doctors, we understand what they need. What were some of the pain points initially you guys said, I know we can solve these items for doctors?
I think the biggest thing is psychology or mindset. Absolutely number one. And, you know, we think 80% or more of success is your psychology or mindset. And you see it all the time. And I think real estate is a great way for people to uncover their fears and limiting beliefs, just because it does throw a bunch of curveballs and challenges. And there's a lot of fear about money and investing. And so one of the things that we really work on with our students is mindset and psychology. And we really try to lead by example by showing them how we take on new challenges all the time. We're not kind of stuck in a rut or stuck in doing one thing. We always are trying to grow, learn. And that's why we're saying we're always investing in ourselves. We're getting new mentors, identifying new mentors and working with them so that we can push ourselves and get to that next level.
I love that. Love what you guys are doing so far. Let's get maybe into the nuts and bolts, what it is that you do in the real estate side of things. So you have a high net worth individual, you have a doctor, somebody comes along, they go through your course. You teach them how to buy single family rentals, short-term rentals, but you guys are also multifamily investors. Do you syndicate as well?
Yeah, I mean, that's, I think, the natural evolution, but more from the perspective of addressing the limiting belief of I don't have enough money. I think when most people invest, they go, okay, I have $50,000 in my bank account, which means that if I put 25% down, I can go out and buy a $200,000 duplex.
And mind you, we were in that mindset for many, many years too.
Yeah, exactly. So that's the mindset challenge, right? Is like, okay, I don't have enough money. But if you really think about it, that's just a limiting belief, because if you turn that question around of I can't invest because I don't have enough money, money and you say, how can I invest with the money that I have? Then you start to turn on your brain, you start to think and you go, okay, maybe I can go find partners, maybe I can go raise the money. And so in that context, right, that's where I think syndications come into play, which is, I think the thought of doing syndication without any experience may seem pretty overwhelming, but you know, there are lots of forms of syndications and you can also do a small syndication, right? There are also ways that you can partner in a way that's very tax efficient, like a tenants in common, or you can just do it the regular way and partner with somebody as well, right? So there's a lot of ways to do it to address that problem of I don't have enough money. And so that's one of the big teachings.
Sure. I mean, our students, they invest in single family homes, they invest in short-term rentals, because there's really actually a great tax loophole right now for short-term rentals. And physicians are very motivated to shelter their taxes. But then they invest in multifamily. We have students buying 60, 80 unit buildings themselves. And then what Kenji's describing is like our 160 unit that we're buying a part of right now. We're doing it as a TIC syndication. So there are four TIC partners. We're buying majority of the building. And then we're doing a small portion as a syndication so we can have some other partners come in and really kind of experience the process with us along the way.
Wow. There's two questions on that. I guess let's get into some mechanics on this. What is the tax loophole? Just so our listeners know, in what I call a loophole, the tax advantage that you may be able to gain right now by that physicians or other high net worth individuals can use in short-term rentals right now. What is that?
There's one that is really useful for short-term rentals and one that's used for long-term rentals. I'll start with the long-term rental one because I think a lot of people have heard of it, and that's real estate professional status. And so this is what Kenji and I, when we first started investing, we did, which has really led to a lot of our growth, is Kenji cut down half time that first year as a physician. And then we bought enough rentals that we could justify that he was spending more time in real estate than as a physician, and that he was spending a minimum of 750 hours a year, 500 of which were on our properties. And so that what that allowed us to do is take all of our real estate losses and make them active to shelter active income. And so Kenji and I have not paid income taxes for 6 years because every year we buy enough real estate to shelter our income. And then we literally recycle all that money back, all the tax savings, all the cash flow. It all goes back into our real estate portfolio to continue to grow it. That's why we've been able to grow so quickly. And then the other one is short-term rental tax loophole. So there's a lot of people are using it right now. And I'll give you another example. So we used it last year. And what we did was we bought a $660,000 cabin, which is where we are right now in Index, Washington. And we did 100 hours of material participation. So in setting up the property, in doing the deal, in overseeing a small rehab. And the more than anyone else is a key because we couldn't have our contractor or our cleaners do more than us. And so we self-managed it for 1 month. So we basically bought it in September, did a small rehab, and then had several stays during the month of December. And so that's basically doing that 100 hours more than anyone else in the calendar year. That allowed us to write off the bonus depreciation, write off the furniture, write off the rehab off of active income and create huge tax savings because we were actively materially participating in the property.
So there are a lot of terms there, but I think what I wanted to boil it down for people is that if you're a doctor or other high income professional and you are paying taxes, then you're doing it wrong, right? I mean, you don't have to. You can actually invest in real estate, cash flow, make money, and at the same time, shelter your income. There's a way to do that with either long-term rentals or short-term rentals or both, which is what we did last year.
Yeah. And a lot of people are doing both.
Right. That's absolutely brilliant. And those are the things that people, I guess, if you don't know about it, you just don't know about it. And the ability to shelter from taxes, I mean, that's going to be your largest, especially for high net worth or, you know, or high income earner, that's going to be your largest expense every year is going to be your tax bill. So the ability to offset that is absolutely strategically powerful.
One thing I wanted to mention was that I think it's true that there's going to be a subset of people who don't know about it. But I know that there's people listening to this who are also running into that psychology and mindset we just talked about, which is, well, okay, in order for me to do that, I would need to go buy my own real estate and manage it and do all this stuff. I can't do that, right? Or I don't have the money to do that. So those are the kind of statements that I know that people are thinking right now, listening to this, who are saying to themselves, oh, that's great for them, but not for me. And that's kind of where I really want to kind of bring up the fact, bring it back to that psychology mindset and why it's so important.
Absolutely. Let's talk about the TIC you guys are working on right now. Break down the structure. I've not done a tenant in common deal before. So break it down why you did a tenant in common deal. Talk us through that part maybe, and then I'll have four questions later.
We did another tenants in common deal the year before. This was a 13 unit and went 50-50 with another tenant. And so the idea is that you're not partners, you're actually co-owners. And that's a really key distinction. And so I think people use the term partner synonymously with co-owner, but it actually is very different. And why it's important is that when you're a co-owner and you own 50% of a property, what you mean is you're a co-owner, but you control the whole property. You can do whatever you want with it. But the key is that as a co-owner, you can 1031 into and 1031 out of the deal. And that's very different than if you are a partner where you're married with somebody. And when you want a 1031, which is a great way to tax defer, when you want a 1031, you got to together sell that property and then go into the next deal together. And there's no way to break up that marriage without impacting your ability to 1031. And so the reason why the TIC is really attractive is that you can 1031 into and 1031 out. In this 160 unit deal, you know, we're investing our own money into this deal. And rather than what I think a lot of syndicators do is that when they put their own skin in the game, they put it in as a limited partner, right? And so when they sell that 160 unit, then they pay capital gains and they can't 1031 that into another deal unless the whole group goes into that next deal together, right? I know there are ways for you to kind of drop out and things like that, but I think it's a lot easier if you're going to put skin in the game in a syndication. It's a lot easier for you to 1031 out of that deal if you put your money in as a TIC. And it's the same thing from the investor's perspective because you still got a lot of skin in the game, but you're just not putting it alongside them as an LP. You're putting it in as a changing the structure, putting your money in differently.
Yeah, I completely understand what you're talking about. Actually, earlier this morning, I was dealing with paperwork on an exit where I am an LP. I invest passively in a lot of deals, and they are half of the group or three quarters of the group is moving on into a 1031. And then the other quarter, because mine are in IRA funds, is now, you know, I don't care if we 1031 it, it's IRA funds. So they're not saving any taxes by moving on. I'm not interested in the next deal or 1031 against you. And so now there's all these wonky, like, you know, different LLCs being created. It's just a paperwork nightmare. So yes, there are ways to give a little more color to what you're saying, to get to do a 1031 if you want to and have some members not do it, but it's just a lot of repapering and a lot of hoops you got to jump through. So that makes a heck of a lot of sense. Kenji and Lady, I've really enjoyed our conversation today. This has been a blast. Thanks. You guys have shared a wealth of information on what you're doing. And I've just loved to see the explosive growth you've had over the last 6 years. This is wild and crazy. And we'll have to just keep track of where you guys go and what your next steps are. Let's jump here into the final four questions, if you don't mind. What is one tool or resource, and I'll put the parentheses here, digital, that you guys find that you can't live without?
I think the tool that's really helpful to us is Facebook, because we have such an incredible community in Facebook and they help each other. And so it's really based on abundance. And so if somebody needs a contractor, if somebody needs somebody to look at their cash and cash calculator, that second pair of eyes or third pair of eyes or fifth pair of eyes is so important. When we started out, we were doing this ourselves. You know, we had our small team of agent and contractor and stuff, but largely we were on our own and looking at deals. And so to have a community, I think, is the most powerful thing you can do as an investor, because it allows you to get multiple perspectives, to balance those downsides and to figure out how can I make the best decision? Because all it is about minimizing your mistakes. And that's how you get ahead.
Right. I love that. Question number two is, if you could help our listeners avoid just one mistake in real estate, what would it be and how would you avoid it?
So I would say I have to speak for Kenji and his mistakes that he made. He really was betting on appreciation and not in cash flow. Mm. And one thing Keith Cunningham says is raw land eats three meals a day. And that's very, very true. And so he even had some properties, just some raw land deals in Florida that he had bought for $150,000 that he had had offers on for what, like 250, 300?
No, you could buy a property for 150 and sell it within 6 months for 350, 400,000. And so for those investing back in the day, I think you guys would remember this, but right after the downturn, those properties that I bought for 150, I couldn't even sell for $5,000 if I wanted to, because nobody wanted to pay the property taxes or the HOA dues on some cases, right? So it was a significant drop. I finally got rid of my last property, I think it was about 13 years later, for 50,000, right? Again, I bought it for 150. 13 years later, I sold it for 50,000.
And that was paying, you know, HOA dues
and property taxes all those years. Yeah.
So I caution people when they're buying raw land right now. I mean, it is very frothy, to use your word. And I hate to see people get caught if there is, or when the downturn comes, if it comes very quickly, which it very well may.
Yeah. And I think it's a good comment to kind of put in there around short-term rentals. I think there's a really craze going on right now. And one of the things Keith says, I'm probably get this wrong, is that if you run enthusiastically in the wrong direction, right, that's not going to get you anywhere, right? It's like, that's what he just says, that's just stupid. And so I think that you want to make sure that you're not just enthusiastically running in the wrong direction in terms of your investments. Make sure that you are thinking about the investment as if the downturn is going to happen, because it is going to happen, and think about what's going to happen to those property values when that does happen.
Yeah, that's absolutely good. Third question for you. When it comes to investing in the world, what's one thing you're doing right now to make the world a better place?
I think it's what we were saying earlier about teaching people how to fish. That's right. Absolutely the core of what we do, is that we are always thinking about how can we make our students more successful? And a lot of that is, how can we teach them to learn this and be able to do this themselves confidently and competently?
Yeah, Robert Kiyosaki, I think if you read Rich Dad, Poor Dad, it really has a lot about financial literacy. Education, financial literacy, and how important it is to get it for yourself rather than hand your money off to somebody else. Because once you learn how to make money, you always have that skill. And we really took that to heart and feel very passionately about helping others get the skills themselves.
Wow, that's fantastic. If our listeners want to get in touch with you, what is the best way to do that?
So you can come check us out on Semi-Retired MD. That's our blog. And our podcast, soon to be renamed, will be Doctors Building Wealth. And that's probably the easiest place to find us.
Fabulous. Thank you so much for your time. I do appreciate it.
Thank you. This was a lot of fun and great questions.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.